This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chips.
McLaurin, top of your screen. Looking that way, the throw, and Terry McLaurin has his second touchdown catch of the day with a head shaker against Deontay Banks.
The quarterback and the number one receiver on the team seem to have built some pretty good rapport with one another, don't you think? Nine games into the season. The best part, Denton, of that touchdown right before the end of the first half that gave Washington a two-touchdown lead is that the plays before that one were just to get in better field goal position. You know you're pretty damn good on offense when you're not even trying to score a touchdown, but you do anyway. Good morning, everybody. Washington is 7-2 for the first time since 1996, following their 27-22 win yesterday in Jersey over the Giants. That 1996 team was coached by Norv Turner, quarterbacked by Gus Frerotte. They were playing in their last season at the venerable RFK Stadium. That team fell to 7-2. They didn't win to get to 7-2. They were actually 7-1, and then they lost in blowout fashion in Buffalo in Week 9. But enough about that team. That team didn't have what this one does. This one is a juggernaut offensively with one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL playing for it. Yesterday's win completed the sweep over the Giants, kept them a half game ahead of surging Philadelphia, whose coach did his best, to give a game away yesterday against Jacksonville, got bailed out at the end. The win over the Giants, by the way, sets up a crucial two-game stretch, probably the most crucial two-game stretch of the season. The Steelers in town Sunday, and then four nights later at Philadelphia, November 14th, in what will be the first of two monumental games in not just the NFC East, but in the NFC this year. The win yesterday, you know, was overall impressive, but there were flaws exposed. Weaknesses exposed. The defense did not play well yesterday for the most part. We didn't see a lot of evidence of the defense, being what it was in previous weeks against Chicago and the week before against Carolina. And my reluctance to sort of crown it as a new defense, as a defense that's reached average or maybe above average, was, I think, justified watching the game yesterday. They are far from perfect on that side of the ball. And it'll probably matter at some point. But right now, Washington, with Jaden Daniels, a quarterback, is so good on offense that they don't have to be great on defense. This is 2024. Offense, great offense, trumps great defense. When you have great offense in 2024, you're going to win a lot of games, which is what's happening right now. They scored on 5 of essentially 7 possessions in the game yesterday. That 8th possession was a possession where they went 69 yards, 9 plays, and ate up the entire remainder of the clock. It was one of those games, and they've played in several of them this year, in part because they don't punt, and sometimes their opponent doesn't punt much either. It was fast-moving. It was low possession count. But their offense just doesn't get stopped. And here's the best part of it. They don't stop themselves. It's flukish when they punt. Listen to some of these numbers. They lead the league in the fewest punts per game. You know, also fewest punts per drive. Different stat, right? Fewest punts per game. But the more crucial one is, what percentage of the time do you punt based on the drive? They have the fewest punts per drive average in the league. And it's not because, you know, some teams, well, they didn't punt because they turned it over. Or they didn't punt because they went for it on fourth down and got stopped. Not this team. You know, 2 more made fourth down conversions in the game yesterday. They're now 11 for 11 on the season. They lead the league. They have not been stopped on fourth down yet. They also lead the league in fewest turnovers. 3 turnovers in 9 games. I think I saw this tweeted out. I want to give it proper credit. I think it was Keim. I think Keim was citing Next Gen or PFF or Elias or somebody like that. Somebody credible anyway. But the 3 turnovers, it was Keim. The 3 turnovers in the first 9 games of an NFL season are the fewest since 1933. That's the first year, by the way, turnovers were tracked. Their points per drive leads the league. Their points per play are top 3 in the league. Their plays per drive lead the league. Their punts per drive, I've already said this one, are the fewest in the league. They lead the league with the fewest 3 and outs. They did have 2 yesterday. They lead the league with the with their average yards per drive. It's over 44 yards per drive now. It's the most in terms of average in the first 9 weeks of a season ever. They don't get stopped. They're the most productive offense in the league. They're the 4th highest scoring team in the league behind Detroit, Baltimore, and believe it or not, Tampa Bay. But their points would be higher per game if they got more opportunities. You know, they don't have a lot of drives per game because they keep the ball and their opponent tends to keep the ball when they have it. Washington also only has 8 takeaways defensively in 9 games. How about add a few more takeaways and they would be the leading scoring team in the league? The Lions have 16 takeaways. Washington in 9 games times 4 quarters a game, they have not yet played an overtime game. They've played 36 quarters. They have scored points in 34 of those 36 quarters. The only 2 they did not score points in, the first quarter of the opener against Tampa Bay and the 4th quarter of the Cleveland game when they were up 34-6 and took their foot off the pedal. The offense is just so good. Cliff Kingsbury is excellent. The supporting cast is decent, but let's not sugarcoat this thing. The reason more than any other that Washington, you could argue, is the best offensive team in the NFL is the quarterback. I mean, it's a broken record every week now, but it was another incredibly good, productive, excellent day for Jaden Daniels. Another A performance for the quarterback. 15 of 22 for 209 yards, 2 touchdowns, both of them to Terry McLaurin. No interceptions, no sacks. You know, keep in mind, he got sacked 5 times in week 2 against this defense. This defense is a top 10 pressure defense, the Giants were. I'm going to get to Jaden's game in more detail, give you the plays that I liked the most, some that I didn't like, when I get to my game take. But right now, Jaden Daniels in terms of the whole package, thrower from the pocket, creator outside of it, is an elite quarterback. The list includes Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Jaden Daniels. You know, you could argue, I guess, Joe Burrow. You know, you could argue a couple of others in terms of talent, but right now, in the league in 2024, those are your top four quarterbacks. And yes, I'm very aware that Patrick Mahomes statistically is not one of the best four quarterbacks, but stats tend to lie, or they can lie. If you've watched Kansas City and you've watched Mahomes when they've needed him to make a throw or make a play with his legs, he's done it. And that's why they're undefeated and they're 9-point favorites to remain undefeated tonight on Monday Night Football against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Jaden is in the class with the best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. I personally would not pick him over Pat Mahomes. I probably wouldn't take him over Lamar Jackson right now. But you could certainly make the case he's third. Josh Allen may be the front runner for the MVP with Lamar Jackson, but Jaden Daniels is climbing that list. We'll look at the odds a little bit later on. I'm sure he moved up a little bit closer to the three quarterbacks that I've mentioned. You know, if you put Mahomes, and I think I would, this is me, I'd put Mahomes as the best quarterback on the planet and has been for a while. I don't care about the numbers. I watch him play. He makes the plays when he has to make the plays. And let's face it, in the last few regular seasons, it's almost like he's been bored during some of these games. You know how he will play when they have to have it in the postseason. Mahomes is number one for me. And then after that, it's a debate as to who I'm taking. Jaden's in the conversation. You know, Jaden is in that conversation because the elite quarterbacks that I just mentioned do two things at a higher level than any other quarterbacks do. Again, you can make the case for Burrow and a couple of others, you know, pushing that tier of behind Mahomes. When it's there, they take it, and they take it at a very high productive level. And when it's not there, they make something good happen with creativity, with mobility. I was talking about this last night after the game and just in watching him as a scrambler. I think he might be the best scrambler of the four. Now, that's saying a lot because of what Lamar Jackson is as a scrambler. But the combination of his quickness, his quick body wiggle ability. Did you see the safety off the edge that just whiffed because of just a quick, you know, juke? His vision, his speed and quickness combined, they're two different things. His decision making. I think you're looking at one of the great scramblers we've ever seen in the NFL. Randall Cunningham, Michael Vick, Steve Young, Lamar Jackson. Jaden led the league in scrambling yards coming in. The designed and option runs are a big part of what he does, but he's just so, so elusive when there's pressure. You can't get to him. You've got to really swarm somehow, or you got to get him to make almost a bad play. His decision-making is so good for a rookie quarterback. He has two interceptions in 9 games. And it's not because he's gotten lucky. You know, the PFF stat that we've referenced the last couple of years, turnover-worthy throws, because Sam Howell and Taylor Heineke had a lot of them. Carson Wentz, I think, had a lot of them. He's third in the fewest turnover-worthy throws in the NFL, according to PFF, coming into yesterday. I don't think he had any others. He doesn't put the ball in harm's way. He only puts it where his guy can catch it. He does not make bad decisions. You know, inside the pocket, in timing, outside the pocket, off timing, off platform. I mentioned this, I think, a couple of weeks ago because I played the soundbite from Dan Quinn. Quinn said a few weeks ago, it's not just the way he's throwing it or the way he's running it. He's playing quarterback. He's playing the position at a high level. That's what's so remarkable about a player 9 games into his career. You'd think you're watching a guy that's a fourth or a fifth or a sixth year pro. We didn't have to wait for this. He's great already. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL already. And what that does is it gives every other part of this football team margin for error. Not in every game it won't, okay? So there are some games that they're going to play. Next two are crucial. Next two will be big-time tests. And certainly when they get to the postseason, if they have to face a Detroit or a healthy San Francisco, you know, there will be less margin for error in the other areas of the team. But when your quarterback is this good, you do have margin for error in most games. Not a great day yesterday on defense. Not a big deal, 27-22. Not a great day on defense on Monday night against Cincinnati. 38-33. Not a great day week two against the team you played yesterday. That's all right. Won that game by 3. Not a great day against maybe the best team in the league, certainly one of the 2 or 3 best teams in the league, Baltimore. You didn't win the game, but you had a chance to win the game when it wasn't a good day on defense. This team is right now a team that offensively is so good and the quarterback is so good that it's now a given, as long as he's upright and healthy, that you're going to win 11 or 12 games this year. It'd be hard not to. That's where we are. You know, of course, you know, they have to take it one game at a time, one play at a time, all the cliches. And they are true in the NFL, which is a massive, over the years, week-to-week league. Things change so dramatically, especially when you don't have the quarterback. But the quarterback makes this team hell to deal with the rest of the way and very dangerous when it gets into the postseason. You know, it's like we really have to kind of wrap our minds around this. It's hard to do because we've been so far away from it for so long that it just didn't seem like it would ever happen to this particular franchise, this particular fan base. It was always, you know, got the wrong guy here, got the wrong guy there, got the wrong front office, got the wrong staff, you know. Big promisers, massive under-deliverers, didn't even have a chance to mask how, you know, incompetent the franchise was by stumbling on to a quarterback, just never did. It's the quarterback. It's the offense right now, and he is leading it. He's having, right now, the greatest rookie season in the history of the league at the position. And he's elevating everybody around him. This is right now legitimately a 7-2 football team that feels even better. Like, it's almost impossible for me to think that the offense isn't going to play well or that he's not going to play well. Like, aren't you expecting now when you turn on the game or you're at the game that the offense is going to move the ball on every drive and he's going to make big play after big play? It's so, so much fun to watch. But even if you're just an NFL fan and not a Washington fan, you can objectively watch this team and say, this team is impossible to defend with him at quarterback. Pittsburgh gets the next chance to do it. And they are, you know, very good on defense. This will be the best test defensively for Washington this year. Cleveland's defense was outstanding, but because they were so incapable offensively, the game just never was close enough context-wise for the defense to be great throughout. Pittsburgh's been rolling offensively with Russell Wilson at quarterback. They can run the football with Najee Harris. They have a really good weapon in Pickens. And they got T.J. Watt, you know, Miles Garrett, Dexter Lawrence. They've played some really good defensive players this year, and they've beaten them. T.J. Watt can wreck a game. like, you know, a few of the players that they've played. But this is a massive test. And that team's coming off a bye. That team's playing well. That team will, to a certain extent, we know this, invade Landover on Sunday. I mean, Chicago had a lot of their fans in the building. It takes a while to weed this problem out, you know, because nobody knew before the season started. Nobody knew when they started selling tickets for 2024 that the quarterback was going to have an historic season, or certainly start to a season, and that the team was going to be a legitimate NFC championship contender. Legitimate. And a team that was going to have a chance to win the most games it's won since 1991. They may crush that this year. So Pittsburgh's going to have a lot of those terrible towels waving. There will be. This is going to be a scene Sunday in Landover. It's the best game on the NFL card. It's not Eagles-Cowboys. The Cowboys, as their own quarterback said yesterday, we blank and suck. Yeah, Dak said that on the sideline. Camera caught it. And he's not wrong. This is a two-team race. Pittsburgh, Sunday. And then four nights later, Philadelphia. The most important two-game stretch this team's had in terms of like legitimate feeling like you are in a heavyweight matchup. Two of them back-to-back in a long time. Washington, by the way, a 2.5-point favorite right now against Pittsburgh. All right, I got a game take to get to. What I liked, what I didn't like. One of those games that had kind of a lot of in-between. Not sure loved it, not sure hated it, but they were observations worth noting and worth describing. I'll get to all of that. Denton will give me his biggest takeaways from the game yesterday when we come back. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin's take. The good, the bad, and the ugly from yesterday's Washington Commanders game.
Let's go! Let's go!
Here's Kevin.
I can probably take it through that point as Jaden Daniels is wide open, and the catch is made. Olamide Zaccheaus cruises inside the 30 of the Giants.
So that play, which came right before the two-minute warning, the Giants still had all three timeouts. It was a 27-22 game. You know, I don't know about you guys. I think I have this sense that a lot of you were like, yeah, they're not going to lose this game. You know, 24-16, they're not going to lose this game. 27-22, nah, because they'll just keep the ball on offense. Like, you know, the other team has to get the ball back to score without Washington scoring. And, of course, they didn't get another chance with the ball. But that play before the two-minute warning was a second-and-9 play that they snapped with 2:05 left. This is all on Brian Daboll and Cliff Kingsbury. Brian Daboll not using his timeouts after the first down play, which was a 1-yard run by Rodriguez, is, you know, clock management malpractice. You always use them prior to the two-minute warning on defense. And by not using it and allowing the clock to tick down to 2:05 gave Washington, and I don't know this to be true, but if Washington had a run call and switched to a throw because there's no penalty, if you will, for throwing the ball before the two-minute warning because an incomplete pass is going to stop the clock just like the two-minute warning will, well, then Kingsbury is playing chess right now. Because that was brilliant. Of course, on 2nd and 9 there, you throw the football. You're not trying to run the football and get them to take timeouts. My sense is they probably had a throw called anyway. The Giants had 10 almost in the box. It was a solid 9 in the box to stop the run. But it's just such a stupid, stupid handling of the clock by Daboll. Just moronic for so many different reasons. Lost time if you do get the ball back. Secondly, this opportunity that they gave Washington, which I think they were going to throw it anyway. I think they basically had 9 in the box, were throwing it, eight or nine in the box were throwing it, lighter box were running it, but you knew they were going to be heavy in the box because they were expecting run. But with 2:05 left, there's no punishment to throwing the football. An incomplete pass doesn't matter. The clock's stopping anyway after the play. Just so stupid. And, I mean, Zacchaeus gets behind. They're basically only, you know, two players in coverage. It's, yeah, I mean, great play. That didn't ice the game, technically, because the Giants still had three timeouts. But, again, the offense just too good. They don't get stopped. All right. My game take, what I liked, what I didn't like, a few other observations. We'll certainly give all of you guys a chance to weigh in. 7-2 for the first time since 96, 28 years. This is the thing that's, I think, most jarring to so many, is that when they have actually had competent seasons, the competence came late in the season, so you basically got rushed into enjoying it at the very end when they made these, you know, 4-5 and 6-7 game win streaks, because we haven't had, you know, in early November and October or September with a good football team in so long. 2016 was really the one team. 2018 to a certain degree, although that felt kind of fraudulent. 2016, they were pretty dynamic offensively, and they were 6-3-1. You know, heading into Thanksgiving in Dallas. But this is a lot of fun to watch. All right, what I liked. Start with the offense. You know, no Brian Robinson Jr. You know, the other game in which they didn't have him against Baltimore was a game in which I'm not sure they really had a plan to run the ball anyway. Today they did. Today the quarterback was involved very much in the run game. And this is where I kind of want to start, and I'll kind of come back to, you know, how good they were offensively. But you saw a game yesterday in which both quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels and Daniel Jones, created 11-on-11 football. And I've talked about this a lot, but in 2012, I'll never forget a conversation with Mike Shanahan one day, and he said, the reason you do this, and the reason, and it hasn't happened because people fear for quarterback safety, et cetera, but the biggest benefit that a lot of people don't really explain or don't really understand is the quarterback isn't handing the football to somebody, which then becomes 10-on-11 football with the quarterback not in the play. With the quarterback in the play, it's 11-on-11. And both teams, you saw yesterday the benefits to an offense when the quarterback is a legit threat in the run game, especially in the zone read slash read option game, however you want to describe it. And when you have a quarterback that is a good decision maker, a good ball handler, and a good runner, of course, and he is presented as a run threat on most plays, and so the snap from the beginning for the defense looks like, uh-oh, this could be a potential quarterback option or a quarterback run. Everything around it is better. You know, the backs, watch the holes that they have when the quarterback puts the defense in conflict, when he puts that outside, you know, end in that, you know, do I play the quarterback or do I crash down and play the runner? Look at what's available to the runners. We've seen this. We saw it in 2012. We've seen it for the last 12 years. Those idiots back in 2012 that told you, that referred to it as the wildcat and said, you know, it's just a fad, didn't understand it because they weren't college football fans. And they didn't understand the benefit of having a quarterback involved in the run game. Of course there's risk. There's risk for a quarterback in the pocket too. And you know what zone read slash read option football does? It makes play action passing so much more effective. The offensive line benefits. The receivers benefit. Because it looks like it might be a run. It might be the back that gets the ball. It might be the quarterback that pulls it. And instead, it's play action, and everybody's taking a step forward, and now there are big holes behind that second layer of the defense. It just keeps the defense in such constant conflict. Washington struggled yesterday with the Giants' dual threat attack with Daniel Jones. offensively, you know, another incredibly productive day. You know, they didn't quite get to their average points per game, which is like 28 and a half or 29, in part, or the average yards per game, in part because they have had some of these games that are that have been very low possession count games. They only had 8 drives, and they scored, you know, in 5 of them. Technically, they had 5 scores and 7 drives, because their 8th drive, if they wanted to score, they could have, but they, you know, ate the clock up and took 3 knees at the Giant 1-yard line. But 27 points, 358 yards. They were 5 for 12 on third down, 2 for 2 on fourth down. You know, the, as I mentioned, the points per drive, the points per play, everything is just top levels of the NFL in those stats that are representative of an efficient and dominant offense. You know, their points per drive, they may not be as explosive as the Lions or as Baltimore, but they just rarely come off the field after they come onto the field without leaving with more points on the board. You know, that's kind of the goal, right? The offense goes on the field. We need points. That's what they do. Even without Brian Robinson Jr. yesterday, they ran the ball effectively. And, you know, it was a lot of Eckler and Rodriguez. I'll get to the players specifically in this game that I really liked. But a lot of it is just because the Giants didn't know if number 5 was going to pull it. You know, a lot of those plays, it's really hard to know for sure if it's a true read option. If the quarterback has the option of pulling it, every play looks like it, you know, when he sticks it in the gut of the running back. A lot of times it's not truly a zone read, but it's really hard. That's really something the coaches know. Sometimes it's, you know, there's not an option to give it. It's supposed to be a pull with a lead blocker. But a lot of that is really for the offensive coordinator and the offensive players to understand. The defense thinks the quarterback may pull it every single time he sticks it in the gut of that running back. By the way, so, you know, they were technically yesterday 3 for 6 in the red zone. So much better red zone day than the week 2, 21-18 win over the Giants when they were 0 for 6 in the red zone and they kicked 7 field goals. You know what shouldn't count, honestly, is a drive into the red zone where you then knee out the clock at the end of the game. But they count it. They counted that as a red zone stop. So really it's 3 for 5 in the red zone because, you know, they took 3 knees at the 1-yard line. All right, let's get to some specific players from the game. We start with the quarterback. You know, as I mentioned, 15 of 22 for 209 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. The rushing yards, if you take the 3 knees out of it, I think it ends up being like 5 times for 37 yards. So, you know, over 7 yards per carry. Really good decisions. You know, a couple of the plays that I marked down that, you know, you could nitpick a bit. I thought there were a couple of zone read decisions where he, you know, either should have left it in the gut of the running back or pulled it. The one that really stood out, it was their 3rd drive in the first half. It was a 2nd-and-1 play at the Giant 12-yard line. I think it was Brian Burns who was playing on the edge. And Burns played quarterback, and Jaden kept it. You know, he usually has a very good feel, and the decisions are usually right. I can think of a couple in the Tampa game where I thought he made the wrong call. But more times than not, he makes the right call. That was a play that stood out as probably not the right decision. I think there was one also earlier in the game where he should have pulled it, and it was a low yardage run for the running back. You know, there were a couple of throws that I'm sure he'd like to have back. One of them was a completion. First half, there's a 1st-and-10, 16-yard completion to Noah Brown. Was not a great throw. He had another on one of the 3rd down stops. But overall, I mean, Jaden was, you know, 5-to-1 basically on good plays to, you know, questionable nitpick plays. The deep shot that drew the DPI, you know, there's a crosser with a tight end. God, man, some of their jerseys that they wear, it's hard to identify the numbers. But he took the deep shot. He will, you know, he throws a great deep ball. That ball's got a shot, but they drew the DPI, so that set up the first touchdown. The first touchdown pass is a great throw. I mean, it's a slant to Terry, who wins immediately, but the coverage is still there, so the ball's got to be low. It's got to be only in a spot where the receiver can catch it. Can't put the ball in harm's way when you decide to throw it on second and goal from the one. The ball is out quickly. It's decisive. It's perfect with accuracy. And he's definitely got trust in Terry, man, that he puts a ball anywhere near him, Terry will catch it. Third drive of the first half, there's a read option keeper for 9 yards and a really, you know, a very effective slide. You know, he's got a slide that looks great, and then there was one where he had kind of an awkward play, and that was on the scramble when he ducked the safety blitz. There's a fourth and one where he just it's on fourth and one. If you get your quarterback out on the edge in a run pass option with this guy, it's just almost impossible to stop. Because first of all, I don't know that even when it's played well defensively that they can stop him from running for a yard. They just can't tackle him in open space. He's one of the most elusive open field runners in the game. That one was easy. Hit Noah Brown, who's really, I mean, it's close call on who his second favorite receiver after Terry is, if it's Ertz or Noah Brown. But Noah Brown gets separation. He made a great catch, by the way, on a little bootleg drop-off where he got nailed second half of the game. But the one I'm talking about is that fourth drive, first half. It was second and 11, second and 12. They overcome those all the time with chunk plays. That was a 31-yarder. The touchdown pass to Terry at the end of the first half, I mean, what can you say? It's just a perfect throw. And it's also a great catch. You know, we've seen so many of those this year, going back to the Cincinnati game, you know, and at the end. But that touchdown pass is a ball that's got to be out quickly. It's got to be accurate. It's got to be in a place where only Terry can catch it inbounds for a touchdown, that the defender doesn't have a shot. I don't know what the Giants were doing defensively. There are 11 seconds left in the half. Washington's got no timeouts. The ball was, where was that touchdown from Denton? Was that the 18-yard line?
It was a 19-yard touchdown pass.
Yeah. What are you doing with Deontay Banks, their worst cover corner in recent weeks, on Terry McLaurin? If there was help, it wasn't executed well. I mean, you're playing everything underneath you in that situation. Dable's not good at kind of situational football. I actually like a lot of what they do schematically on offense, and I think he actually gets the most out of what they have offensively because they're limited. But what are you doing? And, you know, you've got to understand, how many timeouts do they have? That should be your first, you know, question to somebody on the headset. They're at the 19-yard line, 11 seconds to go. They're going to they have to throw it into the end zone, or they got to throw it out of bounds. We're not going to let them score. We'll let them throw a quick out, maybe, and then take one more shot. By the way, the other thing you do defensively on that first play, you hold. You hold. You don't let anybody get a free release. Take a 5-yard automatic first down penalty to burn 6 seconds left. Now they got to make a decision. Are you going to kick the field goal from the 14, or are you going to go for it? You're going to kick the field goal. Horrible situational football. And at the same time, just a great throw. Second half, the play that I talked about, the 16-yard run on the safety blitz, where it's just almost like unfair. You're not going to have a free shot at this guy. By the way, he has such recognition pre-snap too, of where the pressure's coming and whether or not that ball's got to be out quickly or not. That was the one play where he kind of went down a little bit awkwardly. I think he was thinking for a second, I might be able to get more. Had a third and one play action from under center to Sinnott. You know, when he's under center, he's also incredibly effective. Like, when he's under center and you can run some of that play action and you can run some of that, what, you know, the Shanahans call quarterback keeper, we call bootleg, and you get him out on the edge with the defense moving in one direction and him coming back the other, that's, like, unfair. What else do I have here? They had a couple throwaways that were impressive, actually. He had a third and nine before a field goal on the third drive of the second half. He had another – no, that wasn't a third and nine. I'm sorry. He had a third and four, sorry, on their second drive of the second half where he threw it away. That was before the field goal that made it 24-10. He had another one before the field goal that made it 27-16. I don't think anything was there. The third and nine throw to Eckler after they had made the score 24-16 and they needed a drive and the Giants were about to potentially – it was 24-16, excuse me. It was the drive that ended 27-16. Third and nine, that's one of those where you've got more coming than you have blockers and he's got to drift and he's got to be patient and he waits for Eckler to clear and then throws a strike and it turns into a 28-yard catch and run. I mean, that's not a lot of quarterbacks are making that play. You know, that's not an in-the-pocket step up. That's a drift, patient, and then a little bit of a flick. And then the throw that we talked about to Zacchaeus before the two-minute warning. I would imagine that was a called play, that they didn't just switch it to a pass because the Giants were giving free license to them to throw the football with 2:05 left on the clock. Jaden was an A. I mean, clearly, he was an A player yesterday again. It's an A to an A plus every week. I mean, I don't even know what to give. I'm just going to just say A. I mean, I don't even know what a B plus performance would look like at this point. I guess the Tampa game, right? You know, his very first game as an NFL player. I think I gave him a B that day, Denton, because I said, look, all the offense they generated was basically because of him. On the list of things that I like, Terry McLaurin. I mean, he only had two catches for 19 yards. He's now got six touchdowns on the year. His career best is seven in his rookie season. So he's at six through nine games. I think he's having a Pro Bowl season. We got to think about all the NFC wide receivers. Terry's been outstanding this year. He's had incredible contested catches. He has become incredibly trustworthy for this young quarterback because he knows if he puts it anywhere near the right spot, Terry will fight and haul it in. The touchdown catch, both of them were outstanding catches. Man, I loved Chris Rodriguez yesterday. I've liked Rodriguez since they drafted him and he played in the preseason and he played in some of the regular season games last year. I think he runs with great vision, great pads. He is great yards after contact. What was he yesterday? 10 for 51, 11 for 52 in the game. I mean, that last, opportunity, the first and 10 at the 11, wasn't first and goal. You know, that's a hard, get a first down, take three knees situation, and he almost scored on the play that he got the first down on. But that's just impressive to be able to, against a team that's down by five, and you've got a first and 10 at the 11, and you go Rodriguez, three times for a first down to set up three knees on a condensed field when they know you're going to run the football. And it's a great job by the offensive line as well. I thought Eckler was incredibly effective in the game, like he was in that Baltimore game. So was McNichols in that Baltimore game, if my memory serves me correctly. But, Eckler had 11 for 42, but also had three catches for 41. Also had a kickoff return for 35 yards. More on the special teams coming up here in a moment. I thought Noah Brown was really good. That catch that he made where he took that big hit, I think from Pinnock, was so impressive. And I also, offensively, the Diami Brown 3rd-and-18 check down run was outstanding. Yeah, the Giants didn't tackle well there. No doubt. That is a 3rd-and-18 play, all right, from where you're just trying to get better field goal range for Austin Seibert to go up 17-7 at half. They check it down to Diami Brown, and Simmons and Jackson and others are up there, and he threw a stiff arm out there that got separation. It was a physical, big-time run after catch. You know, part of it's on the Giants for bad tackling, but a lot of that is on Diami Brown. 24-yard play on 3rd-and-18 on a check down where you're just trying to improve your field goal position, and that gave them the opportunity, you know, to throw the touchdown pass on the next play. Big difference, 4-point difference, 17-7 at half, you know, versus 21-7 at half. By the way, turns out pretty significant in the game. You know, if the Giants weren't going for two. What else on the list of things that I liked? Okay, defensively, it was not a good day for the defense, and I'll get to that when I get to the list of things that I did not like. But there were a few performances that stood out. I thought Fowler Jr.'s, he had 2 more sacks. He's got 6.5 on the year. He's got a very good first step. He's got multiple moves, and he's relentless. You know, he also was the one that caused the fumble early in the game, which there's a whole lot about that play that I want to get to when we come back and talk about the things that I didn't like in some of the other observations. But I thought he stood out. I thought Chin's performance. Chin had that stop on the first 3rd-and-3 on the opening drive for the Giants. He had the -6 on Wandell Robinson. He really sniffs out screens well. Look, this defense plays fast. They play with great hustle, you know, with great pursuit. They just have some issues in some spots. But I thought that Chin, let me go down my list here. I thought Chin was good. Chin stood out. Fowler stood out. Dorrance Armstrong really stood out to me. I think Armstrong is a good combined pass rusher and run stopper. They didn't do a great job against the run, but I like Armstrong a lot. Inside, Newton a little bit, Payne a little bit, Mathis a little bit. But overall, not a great day for the defense. Lastly, on the things that I liked list, special teams, man. Washington's special teams, their kicker is unbelievable. What? I mean, seriously, think about post week one. Here we go again with a kicker, and Austin Seibert's just been incredible all season long. And in the Meadowlands, not an easy place to kick. Their punt coverage and kickoff coverage, top rate. And it's just one player after another. It's like Reeves, it's Ballor, it's Walker, it's Owens. There's a real, you know, camaraderie. A lot of times the best teams in the league have really good special teams, you know, and you see the culture kind of play out on special teams sometimes more than you do anywhere else. And then Eckler's dangerous as a kickoff returner. And Zacchaeus is a decent punt returner. One last quick kind of kudos to the team yesterday. When you win a game like they did last week, you know, on one of the more memorable plays in franchise history, certainly in recent franchise history, man, I don't know, 7 times out of 10, it's a letdown. You're ripe for that proverbial trap game, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, they won the game. They didn't give one right back. And, you know, it got a little bit dicey. The Giants hung in there yesterday. They did. But I give the coaching staff and those players a lot of credit after the emotion of last week to play the way they did yesterday, especially on offense, and to get a win over a division opponent on the road to get to 7-2. All right, what I didn't like and more. Denton will weigh in as well. Calls next hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Big Sunday yesterday for the Commanders. They advanced to 7-2 for the first time since 1996 with a 27-22 win over the Giants. Jaden was 15-22 for 209 yards and two passing touchdowns. He carried the ball 8 times for 35 yards. Chris Rodriguez was the team's leading rusher, 52 yards on 11 carries. He didn't even know he was going to play until 90 minutes prior to kickoff. On the defensive side, Dante Fowler had 2 sacks and a forced fumble. He leads the team with 6.5 sacks. Elsewhere in the NFL, Philadelphia beat Jacksonville 28-23 to improve to 6-2 on the year. Saquon Barkley leaped over a dude backwards during a run. It's the most insane play I've seen this season. Atlanta beat the Cowboys 27-21. Dak Prescott left the game with a hamstring injury. The Cowboys are now 3-5. The Saints have parted ways with head coach Dennis Allen. That came this morning after the Saints lost to the Carolina Panthers 23-22. They'd lost 7 in a row. In the NHL, Alex Ovechkin scored his 860th goal on Sunday during the team's 4-2 loss to the Carolina Hurricanes. Only a third loss of the year, but it's Ovechkin's 7th goal of the season. And that's what's trending.
After last week's red zone troubles and the first time played the Giants, settling for a lot of field goals, were you pleased with kind of the way you guys converted in the first half in particular there?
Yeah, I thought, getting a chance to go down, we thought in the run game we'd really have to have an impact. And the time of possession really seemed out of whack. I don't know what the numbers were. I haven't looked at it. But they had some long drives. And so getting down into the red zone, you know, when these would be 4-down moments to go to see if we converted. So to have the scores there was big. Sometimes when it's, you know, an 8-point game or in a field goal spot, to say you take the field goal in that spot to go ahead. So we were thinking a lot on the game management side. And even at the end, you know, where, you know, it was close to get, once we got the first down, that was a way to kneel it out. But I thought to close the game in that way, that was a big deal.
Dan Quinn, after the game, a high school coach friend of mine texted me. He said, you should have given the offensive line more credit because Jaden really wasn't pressured that much. I did say the offensive line, but let me just make sure, like, when you watch this game, and I went back and watched offensively early this morning, you're not getting, you know, they had the one safety blitz in which Jaden just made the safety blitzer look silly. You're not getting full bore pass rush against him. You're getting contained pass rush. So, you know, I don't know how next gen measures pass block win rate, because Washington's been top 6, top 7. But what you're now seeing is teams are not going to, you know, come after him with free runners. I mean, they you can't get him. And then you're now playing 11 on 10 or 11 on 9. And it's a bad situation defensively. I'd watch some of those defenders and how they are rushing him. Again, another benefit to having a quarterback like him is that you're not going to face the same kind of pass rush, types that other quarterbacks face. All right, we're up against a hard break here, so I'm going to wait to get to my list of things that I didn't like and a few other observations from the game for the next segment. But figure we'll start taking calls at around 11:25. So in about 15 minutes, you can start lining it up on the phones. 301-230-0980. Ben will join us at 12. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.